Before we get going, I want to point out that we had some audio problems during this episode that we couldn't entirely clean up.
That's because Dasmi was the audio engineer.
If it sounds like Snake is drowning in liquid mercury, that's probably something from the reward center of my brain seeping into the recording somehow. Also, there's a particularly garish edit, so try not to notice.
That's right. Just sit back and enjoy the rage. Hey, only two episodes in, and we've already recorded one of those sorry we suck warnings.
This podcast is not going to work if you second-guess every decision I make for your captivity.
We wouldn't be having this argument about my captivity if you hadn't kidnapped me in the first place.
I am in command of this basement. That means I decide how many chlorine tablets go in the water treatment tank.
Oh yeah, big man, you're in command of the Wait, what are we arguing about again?
I don't know. I've just been fighting with a lot of people for no reason lately.
Have you been sleeping okay?
Until noon every day. Have you been eating okay?
Half a bag of chicken feed this morning.
Jeez, what's wrong with us?
I don't know. Hey, have you seen Another Life on Netflix?
Yeah. You?
Yeah.
Oh. So, hey, I've actually been watching Another Life upstairs, too.
Oh, yeah. What'd you think of it?
Well, I thought it was well acted. Every member of the cast is presenting a crisp reflection of what must have been on the page, and a few of them seem to really dramatically step beyond what was given to them. Also, there were some photography choices that I thought were very good. Most of the Earth scenes were shot very simply and very naturalistically. It's a safe choice, but it looks nice. And when the crew is on board the spacecraft, they go with that color palette that blows out the greens and the oranges that's been, you know, popular in film for the last 12 years or so. And ordinarily, it's not something I like, but in this case, it's really effective at visually communicating that the characters are off in some strange place far from home.
It sounds like you really enjoyed it. What else did you like?
Yeah, Dasmi. The show left me with a really profound sense of empathy for people who have had a flesh-eating bacteria overcome their blood-brain barrier. We've now shared basically the same experience.
It filled me with unfettered rage, mostly.
Anger! Yes, anger. I got that, too. Before we get into it, I should probably say that you and I have agreed that this is going to be a spoiler discussion, because I don't see any point in dancing around what happens, and you, the audience, are not coming to us to find out if this is worth your time, and by the way, it isn't. So why don't I tell you about this?
Yes, it is. Please do tell us. It is not worth your time to watch, and we will spoil everything.
Right. But hey, if you don't know what we're talking about, I'll let you know. Another Life is a teen drama set on board a spaceship, and it's about who's fucking who. And the answers are, I have them written down right here. The smart girl from a tough background was fucking the first traitor until he died. The popular girl was fucking the second traitor until she died. The mission commander was fucking the ship's computer, but now things are a little bit weird between them. And the girl who was basically the same character as Kaylee in Firefly, but not as interesting, adopted two other characters so generic that I can't remember anything about them, and she's fucking them simultaneously. And by simultaneously, I mean actually simultaneously. There's also a question teased for an episode or two about whether or not the biologist, who doesn't know anything about safe specimen handling, and the doctor, who doesn't know how to deal with a seizure, would, you know, do anything. And they do indeed end up consummating their fucking.
You do have to wait quite a while for that to happen. There's a lot of sexual tension.
And feeding each other biospecimens found on an alien planet in a so romantic and heartfelt way that, you know, we completely ignore the fact that if you're even in a strange forest, you don't necessarily want to eat the mushrooms you find on the fallen limbs.
Yeah, the ship's doctor just grabs shit off an alien world and feeds it to people, because that's what doctors do.
Painful, in addition to rage. You know, yeah.
I'm going to read the actual synopsis so people know the show is not just about who's fucking who.
Oh, but it's only about who's fucking who.
It boils down to that, but there's... They wrapped it in a... Well, story's a strong word. They wrapped it in some stuff that happens around the fucking, and we should probably at least acknowledge that.
Okay.
So, set in the future, an anomaly from space appears in Earth's orbit and plants a stalk-like object into the ground. The humans attempt to determine what it is, why it's been placed there, and what's going to happen next. But it's taking too long to crack the code, so they send a team into space to the source of the object to investigate further. That is the IMDb synopsis. But all that boils down to who's fucking who.
You know, it occurs to me watching this that so much of what was on the show is just ripped off from other science fiction. And so, yeah. No, that's not accurate. Let me say, the main creative contributors to the series, they plainly sat down with people working in aerospace, computer science, medicine. They talked about emerging technologies and concepts. They asked about the feasibility of some of their ideas and worked back and forth to find ways to bring them plausibly to light. And the result of all of this was a coherent vision of how manned spaceflight would work in the year 2020 that would serve their plot needs. Actually, no, they didn't do any of that. What they did was superficially rip off a bunch of sci-fi movies that I guess they had watched during the month that they were hashing out their pitch. You know, they fly into space on a spaceship that has artificial gravity because we're at a point where we don't need to lampshade that any longer. They have faster than light travel because, you know, you need that to get out there quickly enough to do the plot. All the spacesuits have lights shining into the eyes of the actors because, you know, the audience needs to be able to read their faces. And, you know, everybody goes into stasis because that's what you do in a sci-fi space travel story. But I can't be completely cynical about that because there is some cause for that. By having a whole bunch of unseen characters off frozen, they have a whole morgue of potential guest stars, human-shaped plot vehicles, and villains on ice.
And they can also discuss them as potential characters, but then not bring them on to save money.
Absolutely, because you can bring them on as guest stars rather than main cast, and the union rules will let you do that, and it's cheaper. And from a storytelling perspective, anytime you need to heighten the emotional intensity of a scene, you can kill off one of these cadavers. They did that. And anytime you need a character with a key skill or a piece of knowledge, you can pull that out of the drawer.
Or you can just refer to it but not actually use the actor.
Absolutely.
Which they did a couple times.
But, you know, all of these tropes, they come together in a way that let us – they let us very meaningfully compare the show with better science fiction that they've ripped off, because we can make actual one-to-one, apples-to-apples comparisons with what they did and their source material. One example I can think of this is the neckburster scene, and that compares rather nicely to when Alien did exactly the same thing decades earlier, except better.
Yeah, and even though, I mean, when was Alien? 80-something?
70.
Oh, yeah, 70.
Yeah.
Even being 30, almost 40 years ago, it looked better.
It did. And if you break down the scene side by side, it's not even just the look. It's everything. When they did this in Alien, it was a scene that really communicated camaraderie well as the initial emotional context. You know, there's this fallen brother who's back from the dead after getting, hugged by a face monster. And he's back from that. We've got this scene where what's basically a family is breaking bread together. We're off somewhere in space, but it feels like Sunday dinner. And after the establishing shot, which has always been compared to The Last Supper, we're hovering amid the conversation as though we've taken our seat. The film escalates the action with a domestic crisis of a man seizing up over his food. You know, we feel the character's call to alarm, but it's not anything that we haven't all dealt with before. You know, somebody taking a bigger bite than they can really deal with. But suddenly it's very serious. And, well, the blood was unexpected. And in the meantime, we've got the antagonist who's been framed separately, observing clinically. And he does join the panic, but he's not responding to the same emotional beats as everyone else. And that sets us up for some events later on in the movie. And there's also the story of how Rudy Scott only gave the rest of the cast a very rough sketch of how the scene was going to play out. And he used that to get some natural reactions of the cast in a wide shot. Now, in another life, when this same thing happens, the crew is uncharacteristically congenial. A fallen sister is back from the dead, and we're off somewhere in space, but this is definitely a co-ed Greek letter organization knocking back some hard liquor. And the victim pauses and hiccups, but we're almost immediately taken to the magnitude of the problem with a close-up giant wart on the back of the victim's neck. And even if you've never seen Alien, you know exactly where this is going.
Yeah.
And there's also the fact that the neck bursting scene is totally CGI based, and the close up of the reaction shots are of actors who are having to imagine a cartoon nervous system sliding out from the back of the neck. And also, since we've been trained from the first episode to hate these people, we're cheering for the virus.
I was thrilled when that chick's neck exploded, I'm not going to lie.
Oh, it was wonderful. I mean, she was one of the characters who was minimally characterized, but anytime one of these idiots die, hooray.
Yeah, but the problem is every time somebody dies, they pull another one right out of the freezer there, and you don't get anywhere in the story, because you're hoping that each one of these people dies and the story ends, but they've got these people in reserve, and there's no progress.
You are hoping that they run out of people
right
in Los Angeles or Vancouver or whatever they're doing their recording who yes is right.
You're hoping that the series ends with the ship just derelict around a planet. But it doesn't. They keep
pulling fresh millennials out of the oven. And that would be brave, and they're never going to do it. And they stole so much else. You know, another moment was the musical communication scene with the crystalline entity. You need to barely know anything about movies to know that that was taken not quite verbatim from Close Encounters of the Third Kind. It would have been better if they did it verbatim.
Yeah, close enough.
Right. I mean, in Close Encounters, there is a buildup of tension from the whole movie as it's finally reaching its peak here. The alien mothership overwhelms the Devil's Tower, and it could overwhelm us too, depending on how this plays out. It's introduced to visual spectacle that more than holds up almost 50 years later. I think it was a practical 4-foot model. Adam Savage recently did a video where he takes a look at the real model that was used in the filming of the movie. And even with none of the lights and none of the darkness or shadow, it still looks cool. It's a practical effect. It's extraordinary. And in the movie, after all this buildup, we're finally looking at each other. First contact. The audience has their jaws open, too. And how do you say hi to that? And, of course, then we get the wonderful conversation where we don't know the words in the language of light and music. And it's ridiculously beautiful. And in the meantime, there's a legion of top men in button-up dress shirts and radio headsets who are still doing their jobs and appraising the situation in side conversations. And somehow they make it still seem completely believable. And then you've got another life doing the same thing where we're presented with a big CGI crystal thing that overwhelms the grassy field that it's in, because a grassy field is a cheap place to film. And some grad students are waving tablets at it. I mean, watch the characters in the background. They're off doing their own thing. They're literally waving tablets around. And after a few comedic false starts, they do the music thing, and it plays music back at us. And, oh, aren't we clever for figuring that out?
I think you just touched on something, and we didn't discuss this before the show, but I think you just touched on like the core problem of this series. When you said the scene in Close Encounters was beautiful, there's nothing beautiful in Another Life at all. The CG's not beautiful, even in a movie I totally just slipped my mind which one I was going to talk. Oh, so there's a scene in Another Life where they're in a shuttle, and for some reason, even though they're in space, the hull is creaking like they're at the bottom of the ocean in a submarine. And they take things like that, which I think are beautiful in other movies. Like if you've seen Run Silent, Run Deep, or Das Boot, where they're underwater and there's the tension, and you could tell like the guys are sweating. There's an actual fear you can feel. It's beautifully shot. It's beautifully acted. You feel like it's a tense scene, but they use that same creaky hole trope, and there's no substance to it. There's no emotion behind it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, we feel similar pain here because they infringed on one of your movies, Das Boot.
Yeah, they did. I love that movie.
And they didn't do it well.
Right. And they same with U-571. U-571. They do the core overheating trope, like you see in the nuclear submarine movies or in other sci-fi movies. But there's nothing behind it. There's no tension. There's no feeling. There's nothing.
And how ridiculous was it that they shot this pivotal first character development, set up the main problem of the series, a scene where Katie Sackhoff kills off one of her crew members in what looks like the physical plant of the sewage system underneath their spacecraft, the Salvari.
Right. That was the first thing I had a problem. You know, you can like a movie and it can have shitty effects and shitty acting, but it can still be a fun movie. And
I think all this movie, of that is fine.
I love
low budget stuff.
Right.
And
exactly.
If this happened in low budget world, it would have been fantastic.
Yeah.
But for something like this.
When I saw that reactor or core, whatever they call it, the engine core, it's literally like a big metal golf ball with a bunch of tubes coming out of it, like plumbing, like shitty plumbing. And it's terrible. I'm struggling to find the words to describe it. It's just, it's dumb.
Yeah,
I know that's simplistic,
it really
but it's
is.
Like they stole all these tropes from other sci-fi and even like submarine movies, but they didn't steal anything good. They didn't look at like, okay, what does the engine room look like in Star Wars or Star Trek or in a submarine? They just went, oh, we'll put a ball with some shit coming out of it, and that's the core.
I actually kind of liked that set because I thought it looked like the interior of one of the train cars toward the end of Snowpiercer, but it didn't match what was going on in this particular Actually, you know, it was kind of Event Horizon in its appearance, but in Event Horizon, they were going for gothic horror in space. There was cause for that particular visual and design choice. Right. Here it was, well, this looks kind of sci-fi. Let's go with that.
It might have fit in the Firefly universe, where it's kind of like the cowboy space opera. And it's like a DIY spacecraft. We got to keep this thing flying from spare parts that we find. But that's not this universe. It was out of place.
Oh, but Dasmi, they had already stolen something from Firefly. The ship's engineer, the woman at the center of the spit roast, she was Kaylee from Firefly.
Yes, but not as attractive, not as smart, not as interesting.
All right, then.
Am I wrong?
Well, I'm not going to go into not as attractive.
Okay, fine. That's perfectly subjective. Not as
again, she's not as good as Kaylee because she's not written as well. Kaylee, if I'm asked to describe Kaylee, she's a very young woman who is very technically adept in that TV savant sort of way. She's characterized by a rich, deeply felt warmth of heart with which she wants all the good in the universe for the people around her. She can find cause to twirl a paper umbrella over her shoulder in cheerful defiance of the viciousness of her circumstances. She's this innocent but not helpless light falling upon the rough, pragmatic characters around her, and also the world itself, the cold sci-fi Western world that they're in. Now, we can say a lot about Kaylee, but this character, August, well, she's able to fix things from time to time, I guess, because we know that because her title is engineer, and when the writers rectally extract a solution to a problem, she can...
Are you referring to the spit roast again, or...
What was that?
Are you referring to the spit roast again, or was that not...
No. I wasn't going there. but there... You know, you ask me if I'm referring to that because all she is in this series is a sexual object.
Right. She doesn't do anything but build up to that.
Yeah, she's the anchor to a highly cooperative love triangle.
And I will say it's the position of the big dumb object that if that's your thing and consenting adults and everything, that's totally cool. However, it was pretty lame in the show.
Not only that, I was told about this particular plot piece coming into it by Dasmi. He told me that there was a threesome in the series. And what I will tell our audience is that he did not specify that Another Life features a male-female-male threesome, which I thought was a serious omission on the part of my co-host.
Sorry.
I really don't forgive you.
It wasn't even titillating or sexy or like something you would enjoy. It was just not. Even the sex scene was terribly done.
It felt very network television in the 90s. You know, when you would see the promo for what's coming up after the football game, and it's your lead actress exposing her sports bra, and it's I guess bland, but it's hard not to be, I think, with
it felt to me like it was it was gratuitous, and I don't have a problem with gratuitous sex, but it's like, I think they just needed a plot device for these characters because they weren't doing anything else. So they're like, I don't know, let's have these three fuck. Why not?
You know, it was gratuitously bland is what it
right.
was.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It felt like they just had blandness. To do something.
Yeah. You know,
did we mention this stars Katie Sackhoff?
We did.
Yeah, okay.
And that was an additional source of pain for me.
Yeah.
Because
yeah, I agree.
The channel, we love Katie Sackhoff. She played a really important character in a show that was really important to most of us, really important for at least two seasons for the rest of us. and she's great. You know, she brings this kind of impish humor to everything that she does. And I love seeing that on screen. I love that she as a person loves sci-fi too. And I want to see her in an enduring role where she finds a lot of success and, you know, enjoys what she's doing. And this just wasn't it.
She's the one redeeming quality of this show. And even then, I don't think it's worth watching. I mean, she's as good as she can be in it, given the shit she was given to work with.
Right away in the first episode, she's given a scene where she has to give a really big, heavy-handed exposition dump. And somehow, even with what she's given, she's punching beyond the shortcomings of the script. It's a husband and wife scene. The wife is telling the husband what he's been doing for the last 6 months or a year or whatever. And the dialogue sucks, but I still somehow believed her in that domestic situation. Not on the merit of what had been written, but on the merit of her talent. And, you know, the show was well acted. We talk about Katie Sackhoff, but there was also Samuel Anderson, who played William, the ship's AI. I first noticed him in Doctor Who a few years ago, and that was another example of a guy who was doing good work with writing that really limited him. He was only ever allowed to be very sullen over the slow motion loss of his girlfriend. And he's an example of another guy who I want to see get a role that matches his abilities. I want to see him get work that's good enough for him.
Yeah, I agree. He actually was very good in the show, but again, the writing was just there's a whole storyline of he plays the ship's computer, he's an AI, of him coming to terms with his emotions and his love, and it's just
oh,
it's
God.
Katie Sackhoff fucks the computer basically, and it makes him so sad he wants to kill himself, even though he's a computer, but he can't deal with his emotions. It reminded me of when in Next Generation.
This is why you need to back up your files, everybody.
Right. You watch the show. You'll see. It's a joke that makes sense. It reminded me of in Star Trek: The Next Generation when Data gets his emotion chip and he can't handle it. But Data has the self-awareness to just turn that shit off like a computer might do. And instead, this AI tries to kill himself.
I know. But, you know, even within the context of that terrible, terrible story, Samuel Anderson, I don't think they gave him enough work, enough room to make it work. He had no chance at that. But he, as an actor on screen, is at least making this failure look good.
Sure.
Right.
Whereas some of the other actors don't.
No. The rest of the cast, they're told to be stupid, hormone-driven, horror film teens, and that's what they do.
Yeah, but they don't even bring anything good to that. I mean, that that can be a good premise. It's just, it's not in this particular case because they didn't even do that right.
Well, I think we need to differentiate between what's typed out in the screenplay that's handed out at the beginning of every day and what they're doing with it. The problems begin with the role that they're handed, but they execute the role. I mean, the characters suck. They are written as sucky characters, and the cast does that.
Right. They're following the letter of the law.
There aren't yeah. problems that emerge from the series as so much as a consequence of inadequate acting as from inadequate writing.
Yes. I call it the Jar Jar Binks syndrome. I feel like the Jar Jar Binks trilogy of Star Wars was, it had competent actors, Ewan McGregor, Samuel L. Jackson, but for some reason they were shit, and it's because of the writing and the directing. These actors on Another Life might be extremely talented, but they just did not have a way to showcase that, I think given the box they were put in.
Yeah. I mean, stupid, irrational people is central to what's wrong with this show. And this
are the exact kind of people you want to go on a space mission, right?
Oh, I'll get to that. No, but even outside of the context of what the story demands or sci-fi as a whole, just in any dramatic writing, when a character is faced with a choice where an irrational or just plain stupid decision available to them takes us to seemingly more fertile storytelling ground, whatever drama follows that is undermined. I can't participate in the suspension of bullshit when so much of your story is built off of moments like that.
Yeah, I agree.
And also, from a storytelling perspective, gratuitous conflict between crazy, stupid people is, it's downright primitive as far as conflict is concerned. I mean, it's what drives reality shows. If this is what you're writing, then that means, great, you can be the guy who cuts Big Brother together.
Yeah, you know what? It's like MTV's Real World in space.
It's exactly like MTV's Real... No, it's not. Because MTV's Real World began in like 1992 or something, where depictions of the sexual reality of our culture, homosexuality, teenagers engaged in the relations that they engage in was difficult to put on the screen at that time. At this point, it's perfectly safe tromping ground for anyone to do, even before the watershed. So, I'm not going to say this is MTV's Real World in space. Real World did more than this show.
Yes, okay.
Is that damning?
Is it clear that we both hate this show yet? I made Snaked watch this. I was watching it on my own and explaining how terrible it is before he even watched it. So he did know what he was getting into before he watched it.
No, I did not. I may have lured you into my basement, but you lured me into this with promises of a threesome, which were not quite delivered.
There was a threesome, and I did tell you the show was terrible before you watched it. I'll pull the IRC logs.
All right, fine. You do that while I whine. So I've just attacked the storytelling at a very fundamental level, but in the context of what the show is setting up in terms of a space mission that's the hope of humanity to learn about and respond to the danger that imperils all of humanity, the shit that they do makes even less sense. Because, how do I begin this? All right. Astronauts are smart. Before, if you're going to be an astronaut, even in the near future, I think this holds true. Before, what you do is you wait until there is a call for the next astronaut class of whatever year, and they are years apart, and you go to usajobs.gov, where you can apply online and submit your resume, because it is just a regular federal job. You become like a GS-11 or something on the pay scale. But before you're even considered, before you rise to the level of where someone will even skim your application, you need a bachelor's degree in a real field. And that can be whatever type of engineering, physical sciences, bioscience, computer science, or mathematics. You need a minimum of 3 years of professional experience with escalating responsibilities, or 1,000 hours of time piloting a jet aircraft. You also need to be able to qualify for a security clearance, which means you'd go through a single scope background investigation where somebody from a three-letter agency combs through your entire life and interviews pretty much everyone you've ever known. And also, they get so many applications that even if you meet these requirements, it's not even about that in practice. It's about how far you radically exceed these requirements, because you're going up against people who might have multiple PhDs. And according to the NASA requirements page, in 2016, which is when I believe they last accepted a new astronaut class, they received 18,300 applications. And among those, they picked 120 people who were interested in just talking to. And from those, they called back about 60. So before you even pick up the phone and hear, hey, this is NASA, they're calling back about 2/3% of their applicants. 2/3%. And if you're among those 60 people that they call back for another round of interviewing, I think they only picked out 12 for that year's class. So then, let's say you're accepted as an astronaut candidate. You now go through another 2 years of training, and this is all the system stuff on board the International Space Station and Soyuz. This is about getting out of a capsule that's landed in the water, and, you know, what you saw in the right stuff, and also classes on things like orbital mechanics. The last time they did this, I imagine there were a lot of Kerbal Space Program jokes. And also medical training, psychological training, physical training. And since you're also becoming a public figure, you go through what's basically a crash course charm school. Now, Dasmi, let me ask you this. How wide is the cross-section between people who qualify for all of that and people who qualify as good contestants on reality television?
Exactly. While you were talking about all that and explaining how unlikely it is to even be called back by NASA, let alone get hired as an astronaut, all I could think of was, if this is the best crew humanity could put together to crew this ship and go have first contact with an alien species, we're fucked. Why don't they just the aliens ought to just blow the planet up?
I agree.
This is the best we're sending is Doctor who eats weird mushrooms on a planet and threesome people. That's the best.
No. The best is Katie Sackhoff, whose character, because of all of these, you know, whiny teenage bullshit problems, is not so much commander of the mission as she is house mom in the space dormitory.
Exactly. And I just thought of another character that we haven't even talked about yet. Katie Sackhoff's husband, is for some reason like the lead scientist they select to make first contact with the artifact that's on Earth somehow lets his daughter like go up to the alien dingus and get inside of it and get can't like just it's all just like who are these fucking people who don't know anything about anything that they're just in charge of stuff. You know what I mean? Like it's just yeah. Oh, we'll pick this dude off the street. That's fine. He can play the keyboard a little bit. He can do the first contact. He'll let his kid wander around the alien thing, which is safe. I'm trying to think of how to explain. Like, I don't. You ever watch on Jimmy Kimmel where they talk to the people on the street and ask him questions to demonstrate how stupid the average person is?
I would rather attribute like, that to Jay Leno, and I imagine his predecessor did the same thing, but I wasn't watching.
Yeah, well, it's like they selected those people who don't know, you know, common knowledge, you know, and they're just like, hey, you guys want to fly a ship and go meet some aliens and shit?
Yeah, it feels like the product of a reality TV casting call.
Yeah.
It's
the Bachelorette in space.
They're not looking for competence. They're looking for certain character archetypes who are going to act in predictable ways and can be led around the nose by a producer who's talking back to them on the PA when they do their talking head segments.
Right, yeah.
You might say that you need... You need these terrible characters because otherwise there's no conflict, and conflict is necessary because it's what drives narrative. Except that's really only one avenue of storytelling. Characters can be situated against circumstances or their environment. I mean, go watch Apollo 13. Which is a movie where every main cast member is a competent professional in a situation where they have every right to rip their hair out and scream, but they don't.
Right.
Now tell me, who is the villain in that film?
Space.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're always accepting that they're in danger. And they're working against it. But, you know, if stupid, schlocky TV, Real Housewives bullshit is all you know, then that's what you write. And I will say that there are real world examples of character conflict in space. In Apollo 7, the crew got, I think they got some head colds and they were overworked. And, Wally Schirra, one of the astronauts on board, gave, mission control some lip. Skylab 4 was an all rookie crew and they actually concealed the illness of one of their guys from mission control. And I think Deke Slayton was head of the astronaut office at that point. And he told them, guys, paraphrasing here, that was a pretty serious fuck-up. That crew also, this was the semi-famous Skylab strike, where they were overworked, they were getting behind schedule, and they said, hey, we need to rework the schedule here. We need to have some time off built in. And that's what happened. And I don't think any of them ever flew again. But if this is what you are capable of writing, you know, use that as your source material.
Do you remember which Apollo mission it was where they licked moon rocks and all had like a zero gravity threesome, or was that not a realistic thing?
I think that was Apollo 69.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I will say, I did a little bit of digging, by which I mean I used a search engine and IMDb.
Pornhub is what it means.
I think I found a cause for many of this show's shortcomings.
You mentioned that last night when we were talking about this, and I've been really looking forward to hearing your theory on why this show is such shit.
All right.
Besides the obvious.
All right. Basically, I'm responding to the fact that so much of the show hinges upon stupid, stupid bullshit high school personal politics. And, well, it turns out that the writers who worked on this show and the series creator actually do write stupid high school drama bullshit. Series creator, Aaron Martin, his previous credits include Paradise Falls, which was a Canadian Who's Fucking Who soap opera set in a vacation town. He did The Best Years, which is described as a teen drama that chronicles the college life of Samantha Best and her friends in Boston, Massachusetts. And also, I'm not making this up, he worked on Degrassi, whatever it is, The Next Generation, which, if you don't know, is a lighthearted teen melodrama in which some moral struggle is introduced at the beginning of every episode and responded to with an acoustic guitar backing motif at the end.
Oh, Jesus Christ. That explains the soundtrack in episode 10.
And I want you to know that I watched an episode of Degrassi last night so that I would have something to say about it. And I make these sacrifices for you, our audience, all 60 of you downloaders. So, yeah, also, the other writers on the show, they were connected to these projects as well. They also did some slasher thing that I think is called Slasher that's on Netflix. But again, this is the world they're coming from. And I feel like I ought to mitigate my hostility to it, because we love sci-fi. We ought to be welcoming newcomers to our genre, because that's one really, really powerful way that it can grow and expand and also surprise us. But when you come in from a soap opera background and that's what you do, and you just show us pictures of sci-fi, that doesn't work. I mean, who's the audience here? Beginning with the poster, you know, it's Katie Sackhoff with a rocket arcing over her face. You know, we're tapping into her Battlestar Galactica fame, and promises are being made here. But these aren't the promises that are being delivered. I have to imagine they have nothing to do with the promises that were being cooked up as the show started to come together. If you're into this, it's because you're into hair pulling on screen, but that's not who we were told this is for. So who is it for?
I'm struggling to find a yeah.
We're gonna keep that long pause in the show.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I was going to say it's for the, you know, the audience of their previous works, but not really, because I don't think those people are going to cross over into sci-fi, even if they're a huge fan of Paradise Falls or whatever the fuck the other one was.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you were watching Degrassi as a kid, are you aware of Aaron Martin?
I doubt it. I mean, and even if you are, not that there can't be crossover between that kind of show and a sci-fi fan, but it's not super likely that you're going to be, holy shit, an Aaron Martin sci-fi show? I got to watch that.
Right.
I think it's just because Netflix greenlights everything to see what sticks. And this one just didn't.
You have to wonder how it came together. You know, where did they get the idea that, you know, our next thing is going to be big sci-fi space opera, and we're just going to throw all of our old things into it. And, you know, it's going to be a big breaking new ground moment for the genre, and people are going to throw rose petals down upon us as we parade down the streets of Toronto or Vancouver, because this was a Canadian production.
It does seem like it was thrown together in a hurry. the visual effects are not amazing. You know what I mean? It's 2019. I mean, you can do very good visual effects on a relatively low budget, and somehow they just didn't.
Yeah, that jumped out at me. I looked it up. The visual effects were done by Kosa VFX. They are a real special effects house. They have some pretty heavy credits to their back catalog. I have it open in front of me. They've contributed to Westworld, Gotham,
really?
Marvel, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., what else? CSI. One of their specialties is they do fantasy UI sequences on in-world computers. They did Jane the Virgin and Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man Tell No Tales.
Seriously?
So it was not a shortcoming of talent here.
Yeah, unless they kicked it over to the interns.
I think it was probably either a limitation of time or a limitation of budget or both.
Yeah.
Because these are not people who are the director of photography's little cousin who is working with a pirated copy of Lightwave.
Right.
These are real professionals working on a show where, holy shit, real professionals don't act like real professionals. Oh my God, it all fits.
Yes. Oh man, I just had an epiphany. Or if you're a Hook fan, an apostrophe.
Okay.
Perhaps this entire show was written as a way to demonstrate how good sci-fi can be. It's an homage to sci-fi by ripping off a bunch of good sci-fi to be shitty and being like, look how good it can be when it's done right. We're going to take all these elements together and make everybody think of these movies they loved, and we're going to do it terribly so that they go back and watch the classics.
I mean, you can actually do that, but it needs to be so much more self-aware than this show is, which isn't true. At all self-aware.
There is no self-aware.
I'm thinking of like the Scary Movie series, yeah. Shit like that. Leslie Nielsen's, oh my God, his whole career. everything he did after Forbidden Planet.
If they turned it up, yeah, that's true. If they had turned it up like, if they had turned up like the whiny bitch, you know, whiny bitch millennial engineers and all that, just turned it up like 20% and made it a little bit funny, it would have been good. You know what I mean?
What was the other show that did that? I think it was Lex or Andromeda. Yeah, they did that. They had Muppets or something on board, and I don't think our members ever really liked that one, but you can appreciate it for what it is because it announces what it is. It tells you what it is. It doesn't lie to you, beginning with the poster.
Yes, it's one big lie all the way through.
It really is. So, oftentimes when we watch a movie or TV show together as a group, I like to jump in afterwards, and if there were problems with the stories, I like to play script doctor and, you know, imagine what I would have fixed if I were in a position of power over the people who put all this together. But I want to begin with you. If this show arrived on your desk and we said, Dasmi, we need you to make this, maybe work is too tall an order, but make this rise to mediocrity, what would you do?
I think I would have kept the character biographies. So you've got a transgender character, totally fine. It's 2019. They should be represented on screen. You've got mixed race characters, people from different backgrounds. That's all great. I wouldn't have changed that. I think I would have just made them professionals at what they do. You know, just made them competent and professional and able to critically think and analyze problems. I think I would have just made them smart.
So basically change the whole show.
I think, yeah. But I think you could get away with a somewhat crappy story and the shitty effects if the characters were actually good at their jobs. They could be the same people, but actually also be skilled at what they do. like there's a scene where the doctor has no idea what to do about a seizure, and then in I think it's episode 9 or 10. Yeah, so I'd make the doctor know how to handle a seizure. You know what I mean? I'd make all the crew know how to handle a seizure, because to be an astronaut, you have to have at least some basic medical training. I think I would have just made them competent, made them not eat random shit on the planet. Of course, that turned into a storyline too.
I'm
going
to respond to your nitpick here, because in anticipation of this, I actually have a tab open in my browser right now. This is Seizure First Aid from the Center of Disease Control. Excuse me. you know what I mean? Ease the person to the floor. Turn the person gently on one side. This will help the person breathe. Clear the area around the person of anything hard or sharp. This can prevent injury. Put something soft, like a folded jacket, under his or her head. Remove eyeglasses. That's a good one to point out. I wouldn't necessarily think of that.
Yeah, I wouldn't have.
Loosen ties or anything around the neck that would make it hard to breathe. Time the seizure. That's also something that you might forget. I mean, look up at a wall or something. If there's a clock there, or if you have a watch on your wrist, do your best. And call 911 if the seizure lasts longer than 5 minutes. Knowing what not to do is also important, they say. Do not hold the person down or try to stop his or her movements.
So you wouldn't just like hold somebody down and go, what the fuck? And then wander off to have a threesome like they do in the show?
Stop seizing.
Yeah.
Okay, it worked. Oh, wait. They stopped seizing because they no longer have a pulse.
Yeah.
I ask you, did they ease the person to the floor? Did they call 911?
Well, they're in space, but they also did.
Well, given how much on the show is believable, it would be perfectly reasonable for them to call 911 and for a space ambulance to show up.
You know what they could have done? They could have asked William, the AI, hey, how do we deal with a seizure? Because he, you know what I mean? He's got all the information of humanity in his in his files there. You know, Google it.
Including information about love.
Yes, he's a lover.
He's a lover, not a competent.
Right. He's a lover, not a competent lover, but he's a lover. That's what I would have done. You could keep the, you know, derivative story. You could keep the shitty graphics. But if you made everybody competent, it would have at least been watchable. And you could still have interpersonal conflict. You've got shows like Battlestar Galactica. There's tons of conflict. But they also are good at their jobs. Breaking Bad. Tons of interpersonal conflict. But they're all good actors. Their writing's incredible. And I guess you could say they're good at their jobs, too. You can keep the conflict. But they can still be competent professionals.
You know, I have a copy of the Battlestar Galactica series Bible, which is, you know, what they give to writers so that they can basically contribute scripts that are on model for what the show is doing. And they do say in that it's okay to push the nuts and bolts of your story away for character development. You know, we don't need to go for perfect accuracy here. We don't need to, you know, follow all the rules of what spaceflight would be and all of that, because this is a show about people and their interactions.
Right.
And I think that's totally fair. You know, the way we approach the conversation, it sounds like we are shooting for perfect hard sci-fi, but you know, we've talked about this a lot in the channel, but it's okay if you're not there. You know, there's a difference between hard and soft sci-fi, where, you know, hard sci-fi at least takes a swing at the problem. Soft sci-fi doesn't worry too much, since it is interested in story development and character development before other considerations, and that is a fair way to arrange your values. But then there's mushy sci-fi, which doesn't give a shit.
Yeah, that's what this is. And even in hard sci-fi, it's science fiction. So, you know, if you gotta fudge the science part to tell the story, that's fine.
I joke about it, but you know, we're at the point where you can have a faster than light drive, you can have zombies, you can have a third thing, where you don't need to explain that for your audience any longer, just right. Because, you know, we've been there before, and it's not like you're making your story better because you're taking your own unique shake at any of that. It's okay, but don't write carelessly.
Yeah, that's all it boils down to, is they just didn't give a fuck about the script.
Well, I think they did, but they were previously working in a genre that has different standards, and you need to get 20 minutes of content out the door every 10 days.
Yeah, that's what it felt like, exactly.
And also, your audience is not necessarily going to be critical enough that, you know, they don't notice that your character acting one way is completely different halfway into the season.
Yes, that's the other thing we haven't even touched on, is there's like inexplicable changes in the way some of these characters, like their fundamental personalities are just different for some reason.
Some reason. That's what we always come back to. For some reason.
That's probably all over the script.
Inexplicable, you know what I mean? Is a word that we keep. Have I said inexplicable in the show yet? No. I better use a synonym. It's the struggle that we as co-hosts are going through right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't even know why I watched this show, but I just decided to watch it, and I quit. I quit at the end of episode 8, and then last night I had to finish it up for this show, and it did not end any better than it started.
I made him do it.
Yeah, well, I mean, I was going to.
That was my revenge for the threesome.
It wasn't that big of a deal, Jesus. I will say, though, there's man ass in this movie, but there's no boobs, or in this series. Which I don't think is entirely fair. I mean, you know, you can have man ass, but come on.
Well, we are very sexist in that we do prefer to see a double standard here rigorously enforced. You know,
I'm totally fine with some man ass, but let's just even it out. You know, how about something for all comers?
And the way I approach it is that, you know, female nudity is exactly what it is on screen. But if we look at the male half of the species, well, there's nothing appealing about that to anyone. Come on.
I have this conversation with my wife regularly that male bodies are like a wheelbarrow. You know what I mean? We're utilitarian.
You know, we would participate in the same demands of script, of filmmaking, if we had anything worthwhile to offer.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, but, you know, so, personal opinion, whatever. Yeah. If you watch this show and the man asks what's your favorite part, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to offend you.
All right. So I think you captured what I would fix pretty well. I mean, take the setup from the series, run with it, have different people write it. You know, you can write the series Bible and then, you know, pass it off to people who have inhabited the sci-fi universe a little bit. Or you know, it doesn't feel like it was even fans of the genre that came in to make this.
Yeah, it doesn't. It feels like some guy who wrote teenage shows just decided to write a sci-fi.
Because that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, but you can be someone who writes teenage drama and be a sci-fi fan, and I don't think these people are.
I have an example of that in mind, but I want to get there by asking you another question.
All right. Let me sit up straight in my chair. Okay, I'm ready.
All right, you're straight and you're in your prestige recording position.
Yes, I'm in my garage. I mean, I'm in your basement, and I'm ready.
All right. And by the way, I do have some maintenance instructions for you with regard to the hot water heater that I'd like to go over later. But anyway, yeah, if you are someone who really enjoyed Another Life at a deep level, What other movies and television shows would you recommend for that person?
Oh God. Well, probably like The Bachelorette, Bachelor, those kind of reality shows.
I think I can see how those things would connect very well. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe something like Hell's Kitchen with Gordon Ramsay, because you've got he's sort of the Katie Sackhoff of that show. You know what I mean? He's the one hurting the emotional horny teenagers who can't do anything right. So Hell's Kitchen probably would work.
And it's an example of one of those shows where we have to do the thing against a totally artificial deadline, so we all hate each other.
Yes, but there is a big difference. Gordon Ramsay never fucks a stove, even, you know, because Katie Sackhoff fucks the computer.
Well, I feel like he would probably go for more of a baked good.
Right.
You know, after it's cooled down a little bit.
What else comes to mind? See, I try not to watch shitty shows, but some of them slip through. Oh man, I'm trying. There's a show that I'm throwing my wife under the bus that she really likes that I hate. What is it?
Well, while you think of that, I did make some notes for myself. We mentioned Real World.
Definitely.
Big Brother. Absolutely.
16.
You know
and
what?
Pregnant.
You know what? You could do a whole season of Big Brother on the set of Another Life.
Yeah,
that actually might be better.
You could
that
just
might
swap
be better.
In the characters. Yeah, you could.
Right.
In fact, you could probably swap the crew, the characters of Big Brother and Another Life, one for one. Just swap them out, and the stories wouldn't change.
All right, I gotta get that thought out of my head. Two more thoughts. I believe there is a Melrose Place DVD collection out. You might be really into that.
I think so. They should package them as a box set.
Oh yes, right. I double feature box set,
yeah.
Beginning with Melrose Place and ending with Another Life. And maybe if there are enough of them still out there, you could pack it in with some Dawson's Creek DVDs as like coasters.
God damn it! It was Dawson's Creek.
Ah, it was Dawson's
that's
Creek.
That's what I was trying to think of. Yeah.
All right. Another thing, if you're really into Another Life, I would recommend that you check out any hospital drama on network television, because those are all who's fucking who stories, except the teens in those are all wearing lab coats, so you get to feel smart while you watch it.
Yeah, I agree.
And also Grey's Anatomy does that same thing where a musical montage begins and the music has nothing to do with the action on the screen because, you know, the network is below a parent company that also has a million recording and record labels and, you know, they gotta cross produce that. It was really weird watching Another Life to hear the Mortal Kombat theme from the motion picture kick in.
Yeah. So I think that's in episode 10. Where the dude's trying to restart the cooling system for the core. And for some reason, yeah, Mortal Kombat just like spins up in the background for no reason at all.
Mortal Kombat!
Yeah, it's really... And there's fluorescent lights on the ceiling of the reactor room blinking just like along with the beat. It's really fucking weird.
Sub-Zero. Johnny Cage.
Yeah. I don't know what I'm struggling. I'm still struggling to understand.
You got to see one of Sub-Zero's fatalities in the show. That was pretty cool.
That's true. That's true. Spine came right out of there.
All right. I do have one serious suggestion. All right. If you want to see the central conceit of Another Life, which is stupid people in space done well, try Jason X, or maybe it's Jason 10. I can't remember. That was the last of the Friday the 13th series that had Kane Hodder, which was the original Jason. And that sends Jason into space or whatever. And the space teens are college students on a field trip under their professor. And they are fucking. And a big scary monster starts ripping them apart, and in the last 5 minutes of the movie becomes Super Jason, and it's so much better, folks.
I'm actually going to I've never seen that. I'm going to have to watch it just to get this out of my head.
Well, I am going to be announcing some movies that we're going to be watching together in the channel in the month of September. I'll give a little bit away right now. We're going to be doing a Snaked Sword and Sorcery September. And I have a series of barbarian movies, I believe all low budget. And most of them I've not seen before, so this is going to be new to me as well. And they're going to be awful. These are movies that know that they're awful. One is from Troma, which I'm not even going to introduce Troma. You'll have to come to the channel and experience it with us. And it's going to be a lot more fun than this.
I'm looking forward to that. I will say that Troma's little tagline is 45 years of disrupting media. So that should be fun.
I think they say real disruption, and real is spelled R-E-E-L.
Yeah, that's okay. That's about as clever as you'd expect. I like it.
So that's where we're going. I don't know, Dasmi, do we have any other final thoughts on Another Life?
Don't watch it. I mean, if you're drunk and there's nothing else you can find on Netflix, put it on. But it's all the you know, shitting on it aside, it really is just not very good.
If you're someone who I don't like, from the bottom of my heart, check this show out.
Yeah, it's that bad. It's not. It's pretty. It was disappointing.
Disappointing. It made us angry. It was a waste of talent. And,
yes,
and
there was.
You know, actually, this is something that I do want to say. If you're a filmmaker, if you're working on a series that you're hoping will be greenlit for a few more seasons, you're not working alone. You have hundreds of other people around you, people who run the equipment, people who drive around and figure out where the rest of the cast and crew are going to park before they get to the location, people who film little close-up shots, people who do catering. Every production is a little temporary company, and not even a little one, a medium-sized company that exists for the duration of the production. And you kind of have a responsibility to the people involved in your show to put in at least 85% of your best effort. And you know, that's not an argument for playing it safe. I'll say it's okay to fail when you're trying something new. If you're taking a big swing and advancing the state of art, or at least trying to, that's worthy of admiration. But if you're just shoveling shit down a chute and somehow you manage to get a distribution deal, I think other people who are working at the 85% level have a right to be offended.
Did you put it that way because there's a literal shit shoot in the show? Because there is.
I forgot about that. No, that was more clever than I intended.
Yeah. Episode 10, there's a shit shoot. Well, I think we could probably put a pin in this one. I think this horse is pretty well beaten.
We just did an autopsy on a very unpleasant corpse.
Right. It's been out in the sun a while, you know.
Oh, well. All right. Well, to our audience, thank you for listening. I'm hoping next time we sit down together, we're going to have a much more positive topic. I'm making a personal effort to watch movies more positively than I typically do. But this was such a swing and a miss that I don't know how to deal with it without attacking it.
There's no other way to go at it. But, you know, it's fun to talk about, and it was I would say it was fun to watch. It wasn't. Because, it wasn't. You know what? That's the best way to sum it up. There are movies and shows that are terrible, and they're still fun to watch. This was terrible and was not fun to watch. It was work. It was just hard work to get through.
We felt like we were doing a job.
Right. Yeah, exactly. That sums it up right there. It was work, and it was not good work.
And you know how well the big dumb object pays.
Right. Chicken feed.
You'll notice that we do not begin our episodes talking about Casper mattresses.
That's right. Although, hey, if Casper Mattresses, if you're listening, we'll definitely sell your shit.
Our souls are for sale.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, hey, why don't you play the outro music? And, you know, it's only 3:30 in the afternoon. I'm going to go get a beer.
Yep. And I will say, if you want to find us, you can find us on any of the major podcasting outlets just by searching for The Big Dumb Object. You can find us on IRC if you'd like to at irc.freenode.net. And we're in the channel Skiffy. And you can find us at our website, which is skiffy.club.
And if you don't know what IRC is or how to get there, we now have instructions on the website.
So, Daphne, who do you think will be the father of August's baby?
I don't care, but how did you know the exact date Real World was released but not Alien?